On RN, I'm Cassie McCullough, and this is The List. Back to the classroom for a moment now.
And so, in this country anyway, a Prime Minister is a man, or briefly a woman, who, like your own Ms. Brooks here, is in charge of how things work, of who does what job and when and how. The only difference is Ms. Brooks has been appointed by the State Education Department and not as a result of some vicious political dogfight. Yes.
What's a dogfight?
Yes, that's Andrew Dugdale, the former Prime Minister, as played by Sean McAuliffe, visiting his grandson's school to, explain what a Prime Minister does. And guess what? Sean McAuliffe's with us now. G'day, Sean.
Hi, Cassie. Thank you. Well, that clip you played, very prescient, as it turned out. That was written long before that our most recent dogfight, anyway.
Well, yes. The timing of the premiere of this show, along with the toppling of Tony Abbott, was that good or bad for your show?
Oh, I think it can only be good. I mean, if only Mr. Turnbull had just left it a couple more weeks, it would have been a little bit better. But I'm sure we were the last thing he was considering. It's very, very rare that I have my thumb on the pulse of the zeitgeist, but I managed to do it quite inadvertently this time. Mm. And so it was lovely having XPM plastered on the first three pages of the newspaper. So that was great. It was great.
You must be kicking yourself that you didn't include a party scene with a marble coffee table.
No, I didn't think of such a thing. No, who would conceive that would be happening? Who would think that anyone would be dancing on a table?
Allegedly,
yes, I beg your pardon. What table? There's no evidence of a table, apparently.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, there's such rich material to draw from. Well, I don't know if this period's any richer than others, but just this week we've had the Tony Abbott after party with the bill presented to the Senate and the news of the table. We've had Paul Keating on stage with Kerry O'Brien. This is rich area that you're treading into. Is it a lot darker than your program?
Oh, yes. Oh, goodness me, yes. I shudder to think what's in store for us over the next few years. No, I'm reasonably hopeful that Mr. Turnbull will remain Prime Minister for at least six months.
That's the kind.
The trouble is, you see, the Labor Party went to all that trouble of saying, okay, we'll never do that again. We'll never, ever, ever do what we did to Gillard, Rudd Gillard. We won't do that again. But now they've seen it. They've seen the Libs do it, and they've seen it work. They say, oh, my God, we could have got, if we pick the right person, this is the problem we had last time, we'd get 68% popularity rating. That's great. Now they're caught in a cleft stick now. They have to undo what they've done.
Yeah. We've become accustomed to seeing your political satire commentary on screen. Are you making a point about the PMs? I mean, about the role they seem to now play in our political landscape?
Well, I hope not. I haven't got any sort of ulterior motive involved there. I'm just trying to make him a likable character, but maybe that in and of itself is a message, I suppose. This ex Prime Minister is not very keen to look back on his legacy. Yeah, and that's unusual, I think. I think he's worried that he hasn't actually accomplished anything.
That legacy and protecting it becomes it's almost obsessive, isn't it? It seems that, I was the one who deregulated the dollar, or
I wonder who you're quoting.
I was going to move on to the gun laws next, actually, but yes. So it does become a kind of sport. In fact, a sort of tragic one, I think of.
I think you're right. I think it is tragic. I think to be keeper of your own flame is a very sad thing to end up doing exclusively, and you wonder whether the time might be better spent, particularly as a lot of these in Tony Abbott's case, for example, he's only 57. That's not old,
and it's like a long time to be ranging around out there.
It is,
it's sniping a long time. Contemporaries.
Or writing op-ed pieces or turning up to, take a parting shot at somebody. And it's not just ex-PMs. I think a lot of politicians do that. And it does become a rather unedifying sport. So in the case of Andrew Dugdale, this fictitious ex-PM, he says he doesn't want to be keeper of his own flame. And I think a lot of the ex-PMs should be aspiring to be more like this fictitious one.
You say you're not making a point about the Prime Ministers and former Prime Ministers. And I think actually in Mad as Hell, it's very difficult to pinpoint any political points you make overtly although maybe Bill Shorten might feel a bit differently. Do you think the zinger is the closest that you come to making, well, having actually a political impact with your work?
I don't know. It doesn't seem to have altered Bill's behaviour at all. He still seems to be occasionally trotting out the odd zinger. I think now it's a thing for him. Maybe it was something a little inadvertent, but now I'm sure there are at least two or three staff members who exclusively are designing quips for Bill Shorten.
But the zinger and the identification of it is of enough political import that journalist David Marr tracked you down for his quarterly essay.
It's the first time I've been quoted in a quarterly essay. That's quite a feather in my cap.
Well, let me quote you directly then. You say, a lot of what he says has an imposed gravity, as if he's closing the book and declaring the conversations at an end. But it's not quite the final word it needs to be. Do you think that you've changed people's attitudes towards Bill Shorten by, well, you know, your deadly identification of this thing? And is that what political comedy really is at its best?
Again, I think that's an inadvertent consequence of it. I mean, all we try to do with Mad as Hell is to, we're certainly not trying to, I've often been asked whether it's the new journalism at all, and I don't think it is. I think we, in order to tell a joke, we need everybody to be, I guess, know enough about the background to a particular subject in order for the joke to pay off. So in so much as there might be a little bit of an introduction to the joke for its setup, that's sort of educative, but only so that everybody knows what we're talking about in order to get the laugh. Our object isn't to educate or elucidate some comment. It's simply to get the laugh at the end of it.
Yeah.
That's it. I have no lofty ambitions at all. And I think that's actually healthier because I think we certainly go into our show with no agenda. We will make a joke with whatever's presented to us. And if something's at the top of the list because it's, you know, it's happened that week, then that's what we'll attempt to do. And you can't make a joke about everything. But something that does lend itself to a joke will be there, and it doesn't matter what side of politics it is. And I think actually it's actually better comedy-wise because it can be more surprising. If somebody's thinking, oh, this is just lefty rubbish, and suddenly, oh, there's a joke about something that I didn't expect them to make. I think that's better because you should be surprising your audience with the subject matter of your material.
We're far less political in our comedy in Australia than in the US, for example, and probably the UK too, although, I mean, they just seem to get so absurd it's hard to know what they're talking about some of the time.
Yeah, well, it's a lot more material in the US.
Yeah,
we've got a very, very bland landscape. Everyone's appealing to the aspirational middle class, so, you know, the jokes are able to be cracked to the left and to the right, and it doesn't make too much difference. And sometimes just the very boredom of it is probably enough of a reason to make the joke. You know, in fact, when we started making Mad as Hell, we thought to ourselves, well, what do we do? Do we make big, lofty issues inconsequential? Is that what we do? Or do we make tiny little domestic points as if they're the most important thing in the world? That seemed to net us more jokes. In other words, making something that was tiny and inconsequential, i.e. Australian politics, into something that it was actually, you know, earth-shatteringly important.
But, for example, Jon Stewart, the recently departed from comedy, at least, host of The Daily Show, he's very political. In fact, he is mainly political with his comedy just dressed up on the outside. That's not something we see here. Is that because there are smaller targets?
Look, it might be where it's seen. I'm not sure the ABC is the right place to see a show like Jon Stewart's show, where it's polemical, I suppose. I think we're all under an obligation when we work for the ABC to have a slightly different approach. So it's not, you know, I've disguised and disguised again whatever point there might be in a joke in order for it to be more palatable. Mm. I think if anyone got up there and banged the drum for left or right, I think that would be rightly shouted down. Also, the other thing is, in order to appeal to your audience, I think you'd be doing yourself a disservice if you just played to half of them.
Well, that's right. I mean, perhaps in larger markets you can do that, but here you make fun of everyone just for the sheer numbers. So we're talking to Sean McAuliffe about his new show, The XPM, but also the idea of how do you mix politics and humour in this country. Sean, the production is, well, it's very, very beautifully done. There's obviously a real attention to detail, and some of the greatest comedic talent on the boards there with you. How did who came to who with the idea for this?
Well, it was my idea to do the series, and I've written it all as well. And I did write it with many actors in mind. For example, Frances Greenslade, who some of your listeners might know from previous shows that I've done, but also from Winners and Losers. I've known Frances since I was 18. We met at university, and we've been working together for over 30 years. And he continues to surprise me. You know, he's still able to. I've been doing the same thing for 30 years, but he seems to be able to do new things.
So I'm thinking of Sir Bobo Gargoyle, yes, or what's yes. his name?
Well, he's a Vice Rear Admiral, Sir Bobo Gargoyle, and he's in charge. So if there's a defence matter, we speak to him, mad as hell. But he plays Curtis, who's Andrew Dugdale's comm car driver. And this week he's in a bit of a bind because he thinks that Andrew Dugdale's wife is trying to seduce him. So he's terribly fraught. He's terribly fraught. He doesn't want his boss to think ill of him, and he doesn't want to insult Mrs. Dugdale as well. So that's coming up next Wednesday. So I don't want to spoil it, but I will say that he doesn't end up in bed with her, which is a rarity for Mrs. Dugdale.
So it's a comedy of manners, essentially, in a way. It really does draw on traditions of farce.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of farce in it, absolutely. We wanted to, I mean, that's certainly the engine that drives it, is the farce engine, which is it makes it interesting trying to occasionally be a bit satirical, because farce and satire actually don't sit terribly well together, but there's evidence of both.
Mm.
And we're very lucky to have the cast that we have, not just Frances, but Nicholas Bell, John Clark. Nikki Wendt plays him as Dugdale. She's wonderful as well. And Lucy Honigman, who plays Ellen.
Yeah, we're not short of good actors in this country right now. What's next? Are you going to do another series?
Well, I hope so. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I think there's certainly other plot lines that I'd worked out, and I'd be more than happy to work with other writers as well on them. But there's more Mad as Hell next year. I've got that starting up again in May, so I'm looking forward to that. And also Frances and I are doing
that'll
a play.
That'll be just at the end of Malcolm's Prime Ministership. Perfect.
Yes, well, I'm hopeful there'll be something terrible that will happen in their lives that'll give us some chance to make some jokes. I look forward to it. Maybe the election will be around there. I'm not sure. I'm assuming an early one will be called, but it may be over and done with by May.
Mm, well, he says it won't be. I guess that's a captain's call. We'll have to wait to see.
Oh, I'm sure he won't invoke that phrase. It'd be the death of him.
Sean McCullough, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Cassie.
Well, that's it for The List this week. I'm Cassie McCullough. I'll see you next week.